I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We have our Friday features for you in Faith Matters. A new study details both the aging of the Catholic religious and the growing ethnic and racial diversity of those who are embracing vocations now. That conversation just a bit later. But first, speaking of race, has race become a four-letter word in America, or rather, racism? Increasingly, it seems the word is being tossed off with casual abandon. Professor Henry Louis Gates Jr., Justice Sonia Sotomayor, President Barack Obama have each been labeled racists by white male pillars of the conservative establishment, but they are not immune. Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, plenty of people are willing to toss the R word in their direction, too. So we wanted to ask, what does that really mean these days? What does it mean to be a racist? To talk about this, we've invited New York Times columnist Ross Douthat, who recently wrote a piece titled Race in 2028, and New Yorker writer Khalifa Sena, who just wrote a commentary about reverse racism. And we invited both of them just to give us their thoughts on this topic. We don't necessarily believe we'll come to some resolution about it, but we thought they might have interesting things to say. So here they are. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So I'm not sure who to start with, really, on this. Even the whole question of who do we start with on this question? Who do we give the first?
It's racially charged.
It is racially charged, because Ross, you're white. Khalifa, for people who don't know, you're African American.
That's right.
So who do we go to first, even on this question? I should have tossed a coin before I did. So Ross, you're sitting here in front of me, so why don't we go first? Who's a racist? What does that mean?
Well, I think what you see on the right these days, with figures like Glenn Beck, figures like Rush Limbaugh, and so on, is an attempt to effectively appropriate a word that has been hurled at conservatives, sometimes with justification, sometimes not, across the last 35 years. And that's become one of the most, I think, potent lines of attack in American culture. To call someone a racist is to make a statement that they are outside the bounds of civilized discourse in a way that, you know, I think few other accusations have that kind of force.
Khalifa, why don't you weigh in? Who's a racist these days?
Well, the piece was kind of about how I noticed at various points people used to talk about reverse racism, and how in accusations over the last year, when people were characterizing, you know, Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama, Sotomayor, Professor Gates, all these different people, the word reverse had kind of dropped out of that formulation. And reverse racism was coming to seem perhaps not redundant, but the word reverse was coming to seem unnecessary. And there is an infinite regress of charges. You know, we go from racist accusations to accusations of racism to accusations of racism and on and on. And I think it's true that being accused of racism can be a harmful thing in the political arena, but I think we've also seen that being accused of accusing people of racism can also be harmful.
Well, and there are a couple of things I wanted to ask about here. Maybe we could take them individually. But first of all, as a people who live in words, right, do you think that we, who the collective we is, should try to use this term more sparingly? Russ, what do you think?
Look, I think American culture would be better off in general if the word were deployed less. And I think the danger that we're seeing now is that for a long time you had the left using the word a lot and the right either using the phrase reverse racism or, you know, conservatives being the ones who said, well, we should talk less about racism overall. And we've now reached a point where it does seem like conservatives want to just get, you know, want to get in on the act. And I think that's an unpleasant and potentially poisonous development.
Can you put that in? Go ahead, Khalifa.
It's such an interesting reversal, too. I mean, for so long you had conservatives and some people on the right saying, you know, let's not talk about race. Let's not bring it up. Why does everything have to be about race? And so it's amazing to see with an African-American president to hear a lot of people on the left and liberals saying, let's not talk about race right now, and a lot of conservatives, people on the right, wanting to talk about it. And again, I don't think this is a process that has necessarily any endpoint, but I think it shifts as people see different advantages or disadvantages in using these words and talking about these issues.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with The New Yorker's Khalifa Sena and Ross Douthat of The New York Times about the politics of race in America. Specifically, what does it mean to be called a racist these days? The dictionary definition of racism, going back to the earliest I could find, was 1933 in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. It says, a belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Second definition, of course, racial prejudice or discrimination. The question I have is, have we become unmoored from this idea that there's a superiority aspect of it or an ability to enforce a sense of superiority aspect of it? Is it simply now a matter of you have opinions about race that I don't agree with, Ross?
Well, there's the word racialism, which you could say is sometimes a more appropriate word than racism. Because as you say, racism connotes ideas of inferiority and superiority. And I think you could say racialism just connotes the idea that racial differences matter, not necessarily in terms of inferiority and superiority, but that they, you know, matter in some sense. And I think that's part of what's getting conflated here, that when, for instance, Sonia Sotomayor gives her famous speech and says, you know, I think a wise Latina with the richness of her experiences, yada, 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 might make better decisions than a white male judge.
Who hasn't lived that life.
Now, you know, is that an assertion of Hispanic racial superiority? Maybe not. Is it an assertion that, you know, we need to constantly be thinking about racial differences?
But that's my question. My question is part of what this effort to claim the word, particularly on the part of the right, is it to say that any time you want to think about race or embrace race in any way or celebrate or talk about that is racist, that noticing race by definition is racist, or perhaps liking your race is racist? Is that what this is?
Part of this is bound up in issues having to do with affirmative action, and that it is the intersection of people celebrating their own race, people, you know, talking about the importance of race with the existence of, broadly speaking, sort of systems of racial preference in American institutions, and specifically in the case of Sotomayor, the sense, particularly among conservatives, that she had been picked because she was a Hispanic.
And I understand that, because your piece also makes the point that part of why that's an issue of anxiety is that it raises the logical question. When you have a country that's becoming more, quote-unquote, minority by the day, how is it possible then that affirmative action should still be necessary? That's part of one of the questions you're asking. And does this whole issue play into white anxieties about now being disadvantage? But Kelliff, I wanted to ask you this question as well. First of all, I think it's interesting to some that to argue that racism is in fact the nuclear bomb of American politics. There are plenty of people who've been accused of being racist who are still walking around doing their thing. I mean, Trent Lott, who some people consider former senator from Mississippi, voluntarily chose to give up his seat. He lost a leadership position, but his political career was not damaged. He chose to resign because he wanted to lobby. So Kelliff, I wanted to ask you, first of all, is being a racist really such a nuclear bomb in politics? And has the term lost its meaning really entirely?
I mean, I think the term means so many things. I mean, the question about what kind of political accusation actually works, actually changes public opinion, to some extent, that's an empirical question. I think there is this, you know, maybe it's peculiarly American, this mixture of optimism and impatience. Optimism on the one hand, a belief that in terms of race that things are getting better, that everyone's getting along better, and also impatience, this sense of can't we be done with this already? And no matter what it is, you know, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on terrorism, this idea that can't we win this and get past it and kind of set it aside? And I'm not sure that you see that happening with race.
Each of you in your pieces have written about the effect of affirmative action on this whole question of racism. Kelliff, you wrote that affirmative action, it now seems clear, helped change white America's attitude about race, although not entirely in the way that its creators intended. Do you agree with Ross that affirmative action is a sort of a continuing source of tension, of what would you call it, Ross? Maybe racial scorekeeping, or sort of continues to kind of elevate tension?
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's
clear that you know, affirmative action, any system of affirmative action, is going to have two consequences. It's going to help the people it's trying to help, and it's going to persistently remind the people it's not trying to help that they're potentially losing out or having other people favored over them for racial reasons. I think that it's generally, I mean, we're headed for, as you said, a point in American history at some point where the traditional, however you want to traditionally define them, whites will not be in the majority anymore. And that could happen in 2039 or 2044. And, you know, it depends on whether you count Hispanics as white and so on. And there's, you know, there's a lot of ambiguities here. But pretty clearly, this is kind of an epical change in American life. And as that change is hastened, I think it's very important for domestic peace in the United States to not have a real deep-seated politics of white resentment develop. I can think you can see that developing on the political right. And I think sort of anxieties about that undergird both my objections to what Glenn Beck says or what Rush Limbaugh says, but also my sense that, you know, at some point soon we need to talk about phasing affirmative action out. Because I think those two things end up, affirmative action in a majority-minority society ends up intersecting in poisonous ways with potential white resentment.
But do you think you can, I guess one of the things it occurs to me that if everybody's a racist, is anybody a racist? Does the term still have any moral force?
Well, I think that's what a lot of liberals and people on the left kind of ran up against when people were talking a lot about systemic racism and structural racism, the idea of racism being somehow inherent in our political and economic systems. Part of what that meant was that everyone was tainted by it and that no one could be free from it. So yeah, that did, you know, for people, you know, on the left or in the tradition of the civil rights movement, that did mean that they had to shift away from talking about individual agency. But I also think that when we talk about the future and you talk about changing demographics, I think it's important not to ascribe too much power to the pundits and not to imply that if we can all talk about this in a reasonable way, then somehow everything will remain calm and cool. Because part of what we're talking about is allocations of power and money and real kind of tangible things like that. And if you have a situation where you have a white minority that is seen by the non-white majority to be controlling, you know, the instruments of power and the economy and all sorts of other things, then of course there's going to be resentment and of course there are going to be issues. So I don't think that changing the vocabulary necessarily changes all the conditions on the ground.
Kelly Fasena of The New Yorker was with us from New York. Ross Douthat of The New York Times was with us from Washington, D.C. I thank you both.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.